The next item on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2019-10, a draft response to Price for Congress. We have four draft answers at this point. I don't know if that means that each one gets one vote. Mr. Paulson.
Thank you, Chair Weintraub. Good morning, Commissioners. Before you are agenda documents 19-33-A, 19-33-B, 19-33-C, and 19-33-D, which respond to an advisory opinion request from Price for Congress, the Principal Campaign Committee of retired Representative Dr. Thomas Price. The requester asks whether it may contribute committee assets to a nonprofit organization and whether that organization may engage in certain activities if Dr. Price will serve as its president and CEO. Draft A, which was held over from the July 25th open meeting, and Draft D both conclude that the committee may donate its assets to the organization as proposed. Drafts B and C both conclude that the proposed activity is prohibited because the donation constitutes the conversion of committee funds to personal use. We did not receive any comments on the drafts. Thank you, and I'd be happy to address any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Do we have any questions for comment or?
Is Mr. Passantino on the telephone, the requester?
Yes, ma'am. Chair, I am on the phone.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Passantino. Do we have any questions? Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to talk a little bit about Draft B, which was entered into the public record after our last conversation. My understanding, Madam Chair, is that that's the draft you're planning to support. So I'd like to talk about it and ask you a few questions with the hope of, one more time, changing your mind to support either Draft A or Draft B. I think, for the record, I still would like to support Draft A, but am willing to support Draft D, and thank you to OGC for drafting that if we could get four votes. With regard to Draft B, and we talked about some of this in the last open meeting, so I'll try to make it quick. Under Section 30114 of FECA, a candidate can transfer money to an organization, and this is under subsection A3, an organization described in Section 170C of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986. In the last open meeting, the chair referenced a tweet, and we went back and looked it up and entered it into the public record. So on the public record, there's a memo from the vice chair and me dated July 25th, and it lays out a tweet from Ellen April, who I believe is a tax professor in California, and her initial tweet says, the proposed draft gets tax law wrong. A Section 501c4 organization is not described in IRC Section 170c. 170c describes orgs that can receive transfers eligible for charitable contribution deduction. 501c3s, yes. C4s, no. And that is a lot of what the chair, some of the language that you were using at the last public meeting was similar to that tweet. But then I'm not sure if you saw that there was a correction entered later by the same professor. She wrote, my error, being a knee-jerk tax lawyer, per draft opinion, C4 promises not to lobby or campaign and thus is described in 170C for purposes of the act and commission regulations, not what we tax folk would say. Why set up a C4 that will operate as a C3? And Mr. Passantino explained why he wants to set up a C4, and frankly, I'm not sure that that's any of our business. But nevertheless, he wants to set up a C4, and this tax lawyer, who it seemed like people were relying on before, then changed her mind. And as OGC's original draft A spells out very nicely, this section is permissible to donate to a C4 under this section. Draft B states on page 5, line 7, the commission has never applied 30114A3 to contributions to 501c4 entities, which are not subject to the same restrictions as C3, and it declines to do so here. And it goes on to say, you know, C3s are okay. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. C3s are okay, but C4s wouldn't be charitable, so no can do. So my question to the chair is, the way I'm reading this, and maybe I'm misreading it, the first part of draft B of the analysis says there is never an example where a C4 could qualify under Section 170C of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986. So that's my first question. Before we get to the personal use issue, is there ever, again, my reading of your draft is that there's never an opportunity for a C4 to fall under provision A3.
I think that you may have overestimated my reliance on that tweet. I did mention it, but the analysis was based on my own history with 170C, which is a provision that I am familiar with and have looked at over the years. It comes up in ethics rules as well as in the campaign finance law, although it's a provision of the tax law. So I've been familiar with that provision for many, many years. And I am, in my understanding, and, you know, we've looked and we haven't seen really any, I think there's one old example, which is in footnote 7. Is it footnote 7? No, sorry, wrong footnote. Footnote 6, sorry. We found one example from a very long time ago where a volunteer fire company was viewed as charitable under Section 170C1 because they were deemed to be for the use of a political subdivision of a state for exclusively public purposes and lessen the burdens of government. But other than that, I'm not aware of any instance where 170C has been said to include 501C4 organizations. It is the section of the tax code that defines what is a charitable contribution, where people can take tax deductions. And so I just don't think there's any authority for it. I don't think it's generally viewed as encompassing 501C4s. And certainly the commission has never said that that is true. What the tax lawyer said on Twitter was, speaking as a tax lawyer, not as a campaign finance expert, she said she wouldn't apply 170C to a 501C4, but she thought maybe the commission could do it under commission regulations and the act, but that's not her primary area of expertise, that's ours.
So I didn't hear an answer to the question. Is it possible for a C4 to avail themselves of Section 30114A3? Can they ever be characterized as a 17C of the IRS?
I don't believe so.
So never. No 501C4 can ever be considered a 170 except for the firefighters.
It's never happened yet. So, yeah, I don't think so.
But the reason people come in for advisory opinion requests is, you know, if it had ever happened before, if we had ever written on the same facts, then they wouldn't have asked for one. So they're asking us to apply our law to the facts before us. And so it's not, it might be true that we've never found for this, but my question is, can a C4 ever be considered a 170 in your mind?
Nope.
No, never. So no C3s, okay?
No C4s.
Excuse me, no C4s.
No C4s.
Just because they're not, I mean, why wouldn't Congress have written right into that section for contributions described in, for only 501C3s?
Maybe because nobody thinks that 170C describes anything other than 501C3s because it never has been.
Well, as I said before, draft A walks through an excellent recitation of why under these circumstances, they're indistinguishable. The 501C3 and the organization that Mr. Price would like to establish is indistinguishable for the purposes of 170C.
I understand that's your opinion.
So I'm going to move on to the for any other lawful purpose. But before I do, Mr. Pasatino, would you like to comment on that part or any part before I move on to the personal use conversation?
I mean, I don't want to waste everyone's time. I can read tea leaves like everyone else. I'm in agreement with you, Chairman Hunter, Commissioner Hunter, in terms of the interpretation of the law, I believe that draft B as in boy gets the law wrong, respectfully. I think that it draws a false equivalence by saying, because the commissioner has long considered 170C to be the equivalent of a 501C3, just because all past advisory opinions grant the ability to provide funds to a 501C3, doesn't mean that the reverse can't be true, that an entity planning to engage in conduct consistent with IRC 170C should therefore not be allowed to engage in that behavior is to me just logically and legally wrong. But again, I don't want to waste people's time. I think that D as in David, going by the any lawful use will also get us there. And so I'm prepared to talk about draft D as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pasatino. I agree with what you just said. So moving on to draft D and the provision of the law 30114A6, which states that monies can be transferred for any other used or transferred for any other lawful purpose unless prohibited by subsection B of this section, which is the personal use section. My understanding of this draft is that, you know, obviously you think that this organization would be considered personal use. And that is spelled out, I guess, most clearly on page 7, line 12 of draft B. The organization proposes to act as a personal vehicle for Dr. Price to promote his ideas, personal brand, and reputation using campaign funds. That's actually not true. They don't propose to act as a personal vehicle. And also later on where it says, it discusses at the bottom of page 7, line 18, the request proposes no oversight or financial controls over Dr. Price's reimbursement decisions. He appears to have unilateral control over this area of the organization's finances. These appearances and publications will enhance Dr. Price's professional reputation and his earning ability, notwithstanding the organization's pledge to only organize unpaid speaking opportunities for Dr. Price. So my question for the chair is, If Mr. Price were to come up with a committee to say that they had to take a look at all of his expenses and somebody else approved his expenses, would that change your opinion if that fact was changed?
I'm not going to give hypothetical opinions on the fly. I do think that what has been proposed is different than anything that the commission has looked at in the past. And I also think that we've seen in recent times that there has been an uptick in activity by campaigns of former members. And I'm speaking generally now. I'm not saying anything about Dr. Price, but we have seen that we have a problem out there with what have come to be known as zombie campaigns, campaigns that live on after the member is no longer in office. And do a variety of things, but you know, I think we always have to come back to the law. The law was actually changed on personal use. So a lot of the old advisory opinions that were relied on in the original draft predated the change in the personal use law, which is now defined as using the funds to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual duties as a holder of federal office. And I think that we really need to take a hard look at what those words mean, because for a former office holder, there isn't anything. He doesn't have an election campaign or duties as a holder of federal office. So everything falls into that bucket. I think that it would be good for the commission. I'm not anticipating that we would necessarily find consensus to do this, but I think in an ideal world, the commission should look at putting out some more stringent guidance on how long these committees can continue to linger out there and be used by former office holders once they are no longer in office and they are plainly not being used anymore to pay expenses that are related to a candidate's election campaign or duties as a holder of federal office. But having said that, when I am faced with an advisory opinion, which is an opportunity to weigh in on that question, I am going to be looking at any such requests more strictly as we go forward, because I think there's a problem out here that was perhaps not recognized in the past. But when we issue these advisory opinions, they are looked to by other individuals. And I believe that to say yes to this request would open up new inroads into the personal use restrictions, and I'm just not willing to go there. And I don't think it's consistent with the literal words of the law.
I think if you read the law literally, every person, when they stop being candidate, would have to, you know, give all of the money back, and nobody does that. And there's all kinds of permitted uses that are spelled out in our own statute. So regardless of how we want to try to, you know, look in the future, the statute permits all of this, and it's been going on for years and years and years. Yes, there have been some issues with zombie packs, and we have a recent enforcement matter where four commissioners voted to find certain uses violated that provision. We also adopted a policy through RAD, and they've done a nice job at implementing that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a zombie pack. We're talking about somebody who came in and asked if they can transfer the money under a provision of our law. And for us to say, for some of us to say, one of the reasons that this is not okay is because things have changed and sort of getting bad out there. And from line 3, page 8, again, these appearances and publications will enhance Dr. Price's professional reputation. I mean, I think that a lot of other organizations out there will have to be concerned if you vote for Draft B. For example, there was a recent news article about former Senator Heidi Heitkamp, who opened an organization, and she's on the board of directors. She's one of the two founders of an organization called One Country, and my understanding is that's a 501c4. An article written in Time on April 25th, 2019 says, quote, a senator who lost re-election in 2018 is using her leftover campaign funds to push her fellow Democrats to reconnect with rural voters, asking that they risk letting President Donald Trump win a second term if they don't. And as I said, she's on the board of directors. The group has already, this is from a different news source, the group has already started working with the Democratic National Committee, according to Axios. And Time magazine reported that Heitkamp is using leftover campaign funds for the project. Another press release from the organization notes that One Country Project, founded by former U.S. Senators Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Donnelly, launched the start of a billboard and social media campaign targeting state fairs in 11 states. The states are listed, and then it says the message in each state will focus on both state-specific and national failings by President Trump for rural communities. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what standard Senator Heitkamp is supposed to look at to find out whether or not a commissioner or two thinks that these activities, whether or not a commissioner or two will think that these activities might enhance her professional reputation and earning ability. So I think it's very dangerous to start, you know, basically making up new standards, you know, post hoc without a rulemaking. And it really will change what a lot of people are doing out there. And it certainly doesn't fall under any provision of the law or commission precedent.
I have to respectfully disagree with that. I'm going back to the statute. The statute that says it's personal use to use leftover campaign funds to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual's duties as a holder of federal office. And as I said, in the ideal world, I think we would do a rulemaking, issue policy guidance, do something more broad-based to return to what Congress appeared to have anticipated. I think one possibility is that in that ideal world, perhaps the commission would say, you know, you have to close down these accounts within a set period of time after the office holder is no longer running for office, and perhaps the pathways that are listed specifically in the statute, maybe those are the only places where you can put the money. But as I said, if I am asked now to opine in the advisory opinion context on whether something complies with this provision, on the personal use that says that it has to be, it can't be used to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual's duties as a holder of federal office, that's what I'm going to look to.
Well, and again, they would have to return all money the minute the campaign was over in order to accomplish what
Well, there are winding down periods. I mean,
well, okay. But going back for a quick second, and then I'd like to hear from Mr. Pasatino about draft D or whatever he wants to talk about for any other lawful purpose or personal use. But going back to I think you just said, well, maybe we should just look at the list in the statute. Well, as you know, one of the things that's listed, which we just talked about, is 170C of IRC. So what if Heidi Heitkamp's group or Dr. Price's group said, okay, we'll go through the burdensome process and we'll change ourselves to a C3, but they're going to be doing the exact same thing, the exact same thing. You would approve that because I think you said under the law that's okay.
Well, I think not everything that qualifies under C4 would qualify under C3. So I can't. Again, that's a hypothetical situation where you're assuming that they would be doing the exact same thing and they would have C3 status.
I'm saying if they submitted the same request, but everything was the same except for they said, I'm going to be a C3, would you approve that? Because they would still, under your view, that might still enhance their professional reputation.
Because of the specific provision in the law that refers to 170C, I would likely approve that, but I don't really like to opine on hypotheticals.
Okay. Mr. Pasatino, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I do. I appreciate the opportunity. I have to say, I have significant concerns here that the commission appears to be attempting to legislate here contrary to explicit statutory, regulatory, and past advisory opinions based solely on the anticipated speech of this individual, and that this is a outcome-based analysis, not in any way based on past precedent, and it's based on who's doing the requesting. If you look at the past precedent, if you look at past advisory opinion, this commission has made explicitly clear that if it's any lawful purpose, even if it were one that's not consistent with 170C, and I'm referring to advisory opinion 1993-10, the Colorado one, which explicitly found that it does not have to be consistent with 170C. Now, we've already said we're willing to do that, but your past guidance says we don't have to do it. We are also now engaged in this conversation about, is this in some way going to be either controlled by or somehow associated with the former member? As the commission knows, we have numerous past advisor opinions, which we've cited to, which are in the draft, 1996-40, the Hancock one, 1983-27, the McDaniel, 1997-1, Bevel. All of those are examples where a former member, former campaign commission, transferred their funds to a tax-exempt entity, albeit a 501c3 in those instances, not a 501c4, but functionally identical the same, in which those individuals, the former members, were either presidents, chairmen, had spouses, had children, all on the board, clearly directly associated. So we're drawing a distinction here that the commission has never drawn before. And we're drawing it on a completely artificial basis. As Commissioner Hunter has said, we could very easily create a 501c3 and do all of these activities. We don't want to for the reasons that we've described. We don't have to under the commission's laws. What we're doing here is we are avoiding explicit past precedent for a reason that does not in any way tie to the law that governs this commission. And we're doing it, I fear, because of who's doing the asking. We're not doing it because of any logic. Under the logic that we're being presented with here, no member could do anything, including all of the past advisory opinions that have previously been blessed. This is not a new request. This is only a minor deviation from what has been explicitly authorized. And I have significant concerns that we're doing it for a reason that this body is not authorized to engage in to reach that conclusion. And I guess I'll add one other thing. There's been significant discussion about, well, we don't have any oversight. We don't have any of the personal use. They're telling us things. It's controlled. Well, this commission, if we were to use these funds in a way that's contrary to our representation, well, then it would become a personal use issue again for this commission. You don't lose the jurisdiction over the use of the funds if we misrepresented how we intend to use the funds. So I think that all of that analysis in draft B as in boy ignores or overlooks the fact that the commission does have the ability to conduct oversight if we're not doing what we say we're going to do. And if we do what we say we're going to do, we're acting squarely within the law and the regulations and the past precedent of this commission.
Mr. Passantino, are the activities of these proposed C4 related to Dr. Price's election campaign?
No more than the conduct for Hancock, McDaniel, Beverly related to their past campaign.
I believe those opinions were issued. Excuse me, Mr. Passantino. I believe those opinions were issued before the law was changed to codify this interpretation of the personal use prohibition. It says that you cannot use the money to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual's duties as a holder of federal office. Can you please explain to me how what you propose to do is related to the candidate's election campaign, or he's no longer a candidate, so I think that's a problem, or duties as a holder of federal office? Oh, he's not a holder of federal office either. And I've heard a lot of language, all due respect, from you, Mr. Passantino, and from Commissioner Hunter, but I have not heard a response to my statutory problem.
So the answer to the statutory problem is, I think, the same as the other, which is that we don't know what this individual's future political aspirations are going to be, what they're going to tie to. Just as we can't discuss hypotheticals on one side, I don't know what the answer is. I can't tell you that his future political aspirations won't in some way tie to the lawful activities of this entity. And if that were the case under your analysis, it would be proper. There's not a time limit here. And as long as it's not personal use, if at some point in the future it relates to future activities, which I don't know, I don't see that as a definitive full stop, as it has never been. And I don't think that the analysis changes based on that one statutory change that you're referring to.
Are you saying he's planning on using the C4 in relation to an election future campaign for office?
No, Madam Chairman, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I don't know what the future holds. I don't know if in some way the activities of this organization in some way tie. I don't expect it. That is not our goal. You're asking me to address future hypotheticals, which I'm saying it's just as improper for me to engage in as it would be for anyone else to engage in. Our request right now is based on the facts as we understand them, as we're submitting them. We know we could stand up a 501c3 and provide the funds to a 501c3 organization. There are other reasons why, as we've discussed in the previous hearing, we don't think we're required to do that. That is an IRS issue. That is not a Federal Election Commission issue. So that's the reason why we are making this request. But I don't think that it ties to the statutory use of campaign funds issue or the personal use analysis.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to add a couple of thoughts. As I mentioned last time, I support draft A. For the reasons I explained at length, I think that a 501c4 can still fit within the confines of 170c of the Internal Revenue Code. That 170c looks not at the formal designation of the organization, but rather at the function of the organization to determine whether or not it fits within its parameters. But turning to the issue of A6 of Section 3114 and how we apply the personal use test and the irrespective test, I'm concerned about the application of that in Draft B. A number of years ago, when I was still back up on Capitol Hill in the aftermath of the passage of McCain-Feingold, the any other lawful purpose provision was taken out originally. And I recall many members of Congress, when they realized that, for example, they would not be able to use campaign funds to, say, run for governor, should they decide to retire from the House or retire from the Senate and run for state office, assuming that the state for which they were seeking that office permitted the funds in the amounts that were in their campaign fund. that was one of the issues that led to the any other lawful purpose being immediately inserted back into the law. However, the way that I understand the draft B's application of the irrespective test would seem to vitiate that understanding, which again was the if not the chief reason, but was certainly one of the main reasons why A6 was inserted back into the law, I believe within maybe even a year or two of McCain-Feingold's passage. I'd have to go back and check the legislative history. So I'm a little concerned that that read undermines what Congress specifically sought to do and is an application in a manner that is not consistent with how this has been viewed in the past. The way we've looked at personal use are, I think we get a lot of clarification about what that test was intended to accomplish by looking at the list, which is admittedly a non-exhaustive list. But when we start looking at mortgage and rent payments and clothing purchases, country club memberships, tuition payments, so forth, payments that immediately inure to the benefit of the office holder. I don't see what's being proposed here as fitting within the nature of the categories that are listed there. And like I said, I think that if we're going to apply the irrespective test in the manner that is proposed by draft B, that we're going to find a lot of members that may have used their campaign funds in the past to, I don't know, run for mayor, run for state office, for governor, they might be shocked to find out that they may have been violating FECA when they did so.
Commissioner Hunter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with everything that's been said. And in addition to the examples that Commissioner Peterson gave, what about current office holders who are donating to 501c4s?
I think that's an entirely different situation.
How so?
Because current office holders who have ongoing political needs to ingratiate themselves with various constituent groups could well decide that it is related to their current campaign to give money to certain charities, to certain C4s who are popular amongst their constituents. I think that could be a campaign-related purpose, assuming that it's not something that falls into the personal use restrictions.
What if doing so would enhance their professional reputation?
You're still not looking at the words of the statute, Commissioner.
Yes, I think the opposite is true.
Well, I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Would you like to go to motions? Or I don't want to cut off debate, but I'm just not sure that we're accomplishing anything here.
Well, as I said in the last open meeting on this, I know Mr. Pasatino has his reasons for filing an advisory opinion request, but I personally don't think that he even needs the protection of one. And I'm really, as he said, I have significant concerns about certain commissioners moving in this direction for all of the reasons that have been discussed. But I am happy to move draft A. Let me just check. Are there any, would any of my colleagues support draft D other than Commissioner Peterson if I moved that? Commissioner Walther, would you be willing to vote for draft D, which is the version that the Office of General Counsel drafted saying that this was okay under the any other lawful purpose provision of the statute?
I don't think it would support that. I think the lawful purpose provision is something we have to look at. But in this particular case, you've got a situation where, we can't do it under C4, we can't do it under C3, so let's just do it and call it a lawful purpose and forget about it. And I don't think that's a proper way to proceed with the kind of confines that we're already either accepting or rejecting, as the case may be, as we go through this. So I don't think that that particular phrase is going to carry the day with me.
Okay.
I know we discussed it, and I understand concerns, but I also have concerns about the fact that it's so wide open that, you know, under the bylaws, which we haven't seen and haven't been seen to see what they really say, but in theory, under the bylaws, they can amend them at any time. And in theory, as I read it, that could be any one person and basically do a whole slug of different things that we aren't contemplating. So it doesn't, it's so open that that raises some concerns with me.
Okay. Therefore, I will move draft A, which is the one that we discussed at the last open meeting. Again, I was willing to support draft D if my colleagues were willing to join on, but there's no indication of that. So I therefore move approval of agenda document number 19-33A, otherwise known as draft A.
Thank you. Commissioner Hunter has moved with respect to advisory opinion request 2019-10 that the commission adopt agenda document 19-33A, which is called draft A, in response. Any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No.
No.
Motion fails 2-2 with the vice chairman and Commissioner Hunter voting in favor and Commissioner Walther and me voting against. Commissioner Walther, do you want to make any motions?
I don't know that we need one, but I'll be glad to move to, excuse me, somebody wants to interrupt me here. Sorry. Let me just say that considering which of the two no drafts, I would prefer draft C, but I recognize that I would support draft B as well, and that's the one that I understand the chair supports. So to get to those two votes, I'm going to support adopting draft B.
Thank you. I believe Commissioner Walther has moved approval of agenda document number 19-33-B, draft B, with respect to advisory opinion request 2019-10. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails 2-2 with Commissioner Walther and me voting in favor and Commissioner Hunter and the vice chairman voting against. I think there's nothing left but for council to draft a letter to the requester saying the commission was unable to render a response. Sorry, Mr. Passantino. Really, it's not personal.
Yeah, thank you.